Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. All right, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for July 25th, 2012. I am so happy that you are here today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. Well, I have a fantastic show planned for you today. We are going to be talking about sleep. You know, sleep at night. Oh, dear. The scope of the problem is incredible. How hard it is for people to get a decent night's sleep. So we're going to tackle the issue of insomnia this week on The Healthy Mind, what the scope of the problem is, and I'm going to offer you a few tips, not a ton, three quick tips that I think will make a big difference in your ability to get a decent night's sleep. Some of these are very, very basic, but I ask you to consider them because a lot of us, this psychiatrist included, don't always follow the best routine at night to be able to ensure a good night's sleep. So that's what we're focusing on this week on The Healthy Mind. Now the website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Any questions, comments, anything that you might have, don't hesitate to send me an email. In fact, this week's program was inspired by one of the listeners, Roger from Vancouver, who wrote a beautiful, beautiful email to me and talked about insomnia and a request that he had to talk about that further. So, Roger, this week's podcast was inspired by you. I've got some great health news as well. We'll do some headlines and we've got ourselves, you know, a pretty decent podcast. So let's begin, you know, talking about sleep. Gosh, how many of you out there are struggling to get a good night's sleep? You know, this problem, I mean, it is everywhere. Whether it's part of our culture or the stressors that are there, the anxieties and worries, all the obligations that we have, for many of us, and this may be you, sleep is a very hard thing to come by. Many of us are going to have problems getting to sleep tonight, and a few of us listening to the show aren't going to get very much, if any, sleep at all. It really is a big problem, not only in America, but throughout the world. You know, the National Sleep Foundation estimates that about 20% of Americans average less than 6 hours of sleep per night. 6 hours. And it really is critical. It is so devastating to our health because according to the CDC, insufficient sleep, insomnia, is linked to so many problems. Those who have sleep problems have a higher incidence of chronic diseases like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and even depression. Now, one of the most popular articles on The Healthy Mind, I mean period, was one of the infographics that was sent to me by one of our friends at The Healthy Mind named Peter Kim. And I really encourage you, if you haven't had a chance yet, please go over to the website. It's a beautiful infographic called Sleepless in America. And it talks about the facts and the problems that we see with this epidemic of insomnia. How much sleep do you think you should be getting? An average adult in the United States or wherever you are, an average adult, 8 hours. And what do we get? Less than 7 on average. And 20% of us are getting less than 6 hours of sleep. Now, it impacts every aspect of our life. I know when I see individual patients, I really do treat sleep as a different symptom because it pervades and can cause a ton of problems with our mood. It makes anxiety worse. It makes depression worse. We know the ramifications of not sleeping well. Yet, when you really take a look at it, there are some very, very common mistakes that we all make that get in the way of a good night's sleep. And the question is always, what can I do to get a better night's sleep? How do I get this under control so I feel rested in the morning and I'm ready to go? Now, one answer isn't going to fit for everybody, but there are some very basic, general tips that we need to consider that can really make a difference between a very fitful night and a very restful night of sleep. And there's three big things that I want you to consider. First of all, a regular routine at night is so critical. We have so much that we struggle with throughout the day. The pressures of work, the pressures of childcare, all of the financial issues, everything is banging around during the day. We get home in the evening or it gets to the evening and we have so many other responsibilities. Work may be done, but children may need to be taken care of or loved ones. Bills need to be paid and everything. And we go and we burn and we burn and we burn. And we don't think about how important it is to have just a little bit of time in the evening for yourself to make sure that we are unwinding in the proper way. We've got to have this transition time that goes from whatever we're doing in the evening or that we're attending to and then getting to bed and to sleep. You've got to take the time to do this, no matter what it is, reading a book, taking some time to talk, whatever it is. But that transition time from the activities of the evening until we get into our routine and get into bed is so critical. Pay attention to your routine and make sure you're not going from immediately after studying or paying the bills or taking care of the children, cleaning up the house, that you're going right to bed. Give yourself that time that you need to just unwind. So taking that routine is number one. Now, number two, and it leads from this, unplug the electronics, okay? Now, what do I mean, unplug the electronics and why? We don't realize how much light, this is the biggest issue, how much light is in the screens that we look at in the evenings. The television, our laptops, and especially now with smartphones and the iPad and tablets, it's so easy and convenient to have a monitor very close to your face. Now, it's very convenient, yes, but the light source, the light that we get off of these screens, fools our brain into thinking that it's still daytime. So in that routine that you take, the second tip that is most important, unplug those electronics. I always think a good rule of thumb is 45 minutes to an hour before you go to bed. Just tell yourself that that's the time that I'm not going to spend in front of the computer or the tablet or the smartphone. I think you'll be surprised how much better you sleep because I've seen that over and over as I've discussed this with my patients. I've experienced it myself when I spend a little bit too much time, maybe preparing the website or putting up some new content. And because I'm on that computer too late, I don't feel tired. Okay? So number one, get that routine in place so you transition from the activities of the evening to bedtime. Number two, unplug the electronics. Get those monitors and that light out of your face. And number three, the third tip to getting a better night's sleep is probably the most important of all of the tips to a better night's sleep. The key to a good night's sleep is not necessarily the time you go to bed, but the time that you wake up. So the most important thing that I tell my patients, and I try to follow myself, is that in trying to get a good night's sleep, I make sure that I have, first and foremost, a consistent wake-up time. That is it. Waking up is the key. Now, why is this so important? Well, say that on one night you don't have a good night's sleep, right? Get up the same time. Whether you get an hour of sleep or 5 hours of sleep, if it's 7 o'clock, get up. If it's 8, 9, whatever time it is, you get up no matter how much sleep you have gotten that night. The body will begin to pivot around that wake-up time. So on some nights, if you haven't slept well and haven't gotten a whole lot of sleep, you're going to have a greater deficit the next day and feel quite tired. And you'll begin to fall asleep earlier simply because you've maintained that consistent wake-up time. Oftentimes what people do is, if they haven't slept well or they're chasing the clock at night, we all have been there, they'll give themselves extra time to sleep the next day. But that throws off the sleep cycle and shifts it to later in the evening. So by maintaining that consistent wake-up time, it's a very, very strong signal to your body that you will not vary your wake-up time, and you will see the sleep schedule shifts around that. It's very, very powerful. So, in review, the 3 key tips to a better night's sleep. Number 1, routine. Get into that routine that you take for yourself and cool it down as you transition from the activities of the evening to sleep. Number 2, unplug. Unplug those electronics at least an hour or so before you go to bed. The light there can fool your brain into thinking that you're sleeping. And finally, and most importantly, have a consistent wake-up time. No matter how much you sleep that particular night, you are getting up at the same time in the morning, no matter how much sleep you have gotten. And I really think you'd be surprised, and hopefully you will be pleasantly surprised, when you utilize this and commit to it, how much your sleep will improve. I hope it does. A good night's sleep is not a luxury. It is critical, not only for our physical health, but our emotional health as well. And putting into place just a couple of changes can dramatically change our quality of sleep. And that, my friends, is a wonderful first step to take down our road to a healthy mind. And now it's time for news. Okay, wow, what a busy week for news. Now, this first story I found fascinating. It was right here out of Ohio State University here in Columbus, Ohio. The headline, "Why Some Forms of Multitasking Are More Dangerous Than Others." Now, this was a fascinating new study, and the implications here are huge, especially for driving and why texting and driving is so dangerous. And it's not exactly what you think. This study showed that people are better at juggling some forms of multitasking than they are at other forms. And the interesting thing here was that trying to do 2 visual tasks at once really hurt performance in both of the tasks. And this was found to be significantly more of a problem than combining a visual task and an audio task. Now, here is the interesting part. The people who were studied in this particular research, who tried to do 2 of the visual tasks at the same time, they rated their performance as better. They thought they did better than those who combined a visual and an audio task, even though their actual performance was worse. So we don't do as well when we multitask at 2 visual tasks, and yet we think we're doing a lot better. Think about what that means when we are trying to do, say, something like keeping our eyes on the road and trying to text or look at our smartphone. Now, the lead author of the study, Dr. Zhang Wang, stated, quote, "Many people have this overconfidence in how well they can multitask, and our study shows that this particularly is the case when they combine 2 visual tasks. People's perception about how well they're doing doesn't match up with how they actually perform." So this really is some very, very timely research, because especially when we're talking about driving and texting, and you're seeing states rushing to make new laws and make that practice illegal, this may be part of the reason why it's getting validated by the research. Because when we're doing two visually oriented tasks at once, not only are we doing a poor job at both, but we actually think that we are doing a lot better than we actually are. Something really, really important. And I encourage you all to share this article that's up on thehealthymind.com with your friends, and especially maybe your children who drive, so they understand the dangers that are there. Okay, now, this next story, again, it goes kind of to the heart of everything that I hope to accomplish here on The Healthy Mind, particularly with the emphasis on the mind-body connection. The headline, How Yoga Reduces Stress. It's all about inflammation. Now, caregivers out there are really the unsung heroes in the work that they do to take care of their family members that might be ill, chronic health problems, dementia, and the like. One of the biggest reasons, at least in my experience, that people come in to see someone like me is the role reversal that occurs with adult children as they start taking care of parents who have these chronic medical problems like dementia. And that creates a tremendous amount of stress in the caregivers. Now, the interesting thing was, there's been some recent reports, and I've talked about it on The Healthy Mind before, that those who are stressed show higher levels of inflammatory markers in the body. The markers of inflammation are raised in the bodies of those who are at high levels of stress. We've always got to be careful, too, with these particular family members that are caregivers, because they are really at risk for stress-related disease and problems with their health. Now, during this study that was done at UCLA, the researchers found that, on average, the prevalence of depression in family dementia caregivers approaches 50%. Half of those loved ones that take care of family members with dementia have a risk of being depressed. Now, research has suggested for quite a bit of time now that various interventions like meditation and relaxation can reduce the adverse effects of this stress of being a caregiver on your overall physical and emotional health and well-being. But the way that this happens, the specific pathways that this happens in the body, haven't been that well understood. And that's what they did in this particular study. They tried to figure out, why is it that things like meditation or various yoga practices are so protective? And what the individuals who participated in the study did was they were given 12-minute meditative practices to do. One group was taught a yoga-type practice of meditation, and another group was asked to just relax quietly and listen to a CD that had relaxing instrumental music. And what they did also during that time of the study, which was about 8 weeks, was they took blood samples from both groups, those that did the specific yoga meditation and those that just simply relaxed listening to some pleasant music. And what did they find? Well, they found that that relaxation worked. It worked in lowering the proteins that served as markers for inflammation, reducing the stress by taking the time to meditate and relax. Has huge implications on the body. It isn't just about relaxing to be calm, but that relaxation provided profound changes in the body, which lowered the inflammatory markers in the body. Now, that's very consistent with other work that's been done in looking at emotions, mood, and inflammation. And this is why I always say to individuals, and why I've mentioned it here repeatedly on The Healthy Mind, when we talk about improving our emotional health, it isn't just about feeling better with regards to our mood. That's great. But the bigger issues that are there are the profound changes that relaxation and keeping stress as low as possible, the effect that that has on our body physically. biologically, and it's huge. That's why it's so important to consider this mind-body connection. You cannot separate it. And it's studies like this that really show simple techniques, simple practices can have huge implications on both our emotional but also our physical well-being. The mind-body connection. Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. University research links childhood obesity to cancer risk. Researchers at Tel Aviv University found that obesity in adolescents has a direct link to the incidence of bladder, urinary tract, and colorectal cancers in adulthood. And finally, researchers at Harvard and the University College of London have found that we punish cheaters only when they end up better off than us in a study that challenges the notion that punishment is motivated by revenge. It's not revenge. It's fairness. Oh, dear. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. You can always follow me on Twitter as well. I'm at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions you may have, comments, criticisms, I want to hear from you. I mean, this podcast was due to a listener, Roger, thank you, in Vancouver. The email address, as always, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind podcast part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on The Healthy Mind.